ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके। कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमग्नानाथिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः। श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय। दिस् इस् दि ग्रन्थराज कैंटो 7 Chapter 14, entitled Ideal Family Life, and today we will begin with text number 19, which appears to be written on the board. We'll also go on to texts 20 through 23 because they're closely related, and may even touch on text 24. So please repeat. Kuryat अपर पक्षीयं मासे प्रौष्ठपदे द्विजः श्राद्धं पित्रोः यथा वित्तं तद्बन्धूणां च वित्तवान्। कुर्याद् अपर पक्षीयं मासि प्रौष्ठपदे द्विजः श्राद्धं पित्रोर्यथा वित्तं तद्बन्धूनां च वित्तवान्। कुर्यात् one should perform अपरपक्षीयं during the fortnight of the dark moon, Masi, in the month of Ashvin, October through November. Praushthapade, in the month of Padra, August and September. Dvijaham, twice born. Shraddham, oblations. Pitroho, unto the forefathers. Yathavittam, according to one's means of income. Tadbandhunam cha, as well as relatives of forefathers. Vittavan, one who is sufficiently rich. Translation. A brahmana who is sufficiently rich must offer oblations to the forefathers during the dark moon fortnight in the latter part of the month of Bhadra. Similarly, he should offer oblations to the relatives of the forefathers during the Mahalaya ceremonies in the month of Ashvin. There's no purport here, but there is a footnote. Srila Prabhupada writes, the Mahalaya festivals are observed on the 15th day of the dark fortnight of the month of Ashwin and mark the last day of the Vedic lunar year. I'm going to go on to the next group of texts, 20 through 23 because those have a purport. I'll just recite the Sanskrit. You also have it. Ayane vishve kuryat vyatipate dinakshaye chandraditya parage cha dvadashyam shravaneshu cha tritiyayam shuklapakshe navamyam athakartike chatasrishvapit ashtakasu hemante shishire tatha maghe chasita saptayam magha raka samagame rakaya chanumatya cha masarkshani yutanyapi dvadashyam anuradhasyat shravanastisra uttaraham tishrish ekadashi vaso janmakshashrona yoga yoga. Translation: one should perform the Shraddha ceremony on the Makara Sankranti day, when the sun begins to move north, or on the Karakata Sankranti, the day when the sun begins to move south. One should also perform this ceremony on the Mesha Sankranti day and the Tula Sankranti day in the yoga named Vyatipata, on that day in which three lunar tithis are conjoined. During an eclipse of the wind of either the moon or the sun, on the 12th lunar day, and in the Shravana Nakshatra. One should perform this ceremony on the Akshaya Tritiya day, on the 9th lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Kartik, on the 4 Ashtakas in the winter season and cool season, on the 7th lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Magha, during the conjunction of Magha Nakshatra and the full moon day, and on the days when the moon is completely full, or not quite completely full, when these days are conjoined with the nakshatras from which the names of certain months are derived. One should also perform the Shraddha ceremony on the 12th lunar day when it is in conjunction with any of the nakshatras named Anuradha, Shravana, Uttara Palguni, Uttarashadha, or Uttara Bhadrapada. Again, one should perform this ceremony when the 11th lunar day is in conjunction with either Uttara Falguni, Uttarashadha, or Uttara Bhadrapada. Finally, one should perform this ceremony on days conjoined with one's own birth star, Janma Nakshatra, or with Shravana Nakshatra. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The word ayana means path or going. The 6 months when the sun moves toward the north are called Uttarayana, or the northern path, and the 6 months when it moves south are called Dakshinayana, or the southern path. These are mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 24 and 25, Which one are we in? Uttarayana or Dakshinayana? Uttarayana. One should always know where he is and what time it is. Srila Prabhupada said, if someone doesn't know what day it is, he's crazy. So we think that it's in May right now. And we think that we're in a place called India. Actually, these are all mental constructions of someone other than Vyasadeva. Just good to take note of that. All right, so to continue, The first day when the sun begins to move north and enter the zodiacal sign of Capricorn is called Makara Sankranti, famous day. And the first day when the sun begins to move south and enter the sign of Cancer is called Karkata Sankranti. On these 2 days of the year, one should perform the Shraddha ceremony. Vishuva, or Vishuva Sankranti, means Mesha Sankranti, or the day when, in which the sun enters into the sign Aries. Tula Sankranti is the day on which the sun enters the sign Libra. Both of these days occur only once within a year. What does Tula mean? Scale. Tula Bharana. Libra is supposed to be balanced, like a scale. So both these days occur only once within a year. The word yoga refers to a certain relationship between the sun and the moon as they move in the sky. There are 27 different degrees of yoga, of which the 17th is called Vyatipada. On the day when this occurs, one should perform the Shraddha ceremony. A tithi, or lunar day, consists of the distance between the longitude of the sun and that of the moon. Sometimes, a tithi is less than 24 hours. When it starts after sunrise on a certain day and ends before the sunrise of the following day, the previous tithi and the following tithi both touch the 24-hour day between the sunrises. This is called Triyahasparsha, or a day touched by some portion of three tithis. Srilajit Goswami has given quotations from many shastras stating that the Shraddha ceremony of oblations to the forefathers should not be performed on Ekadashi Tithi. When the tithi of the death anniversary falls on the Ekadashi day, the Shraddha ceremony should be held not on Ekadashi, but on the next day, or Dwadashi. In the Brahmavaivarta Purana, it is said, Ye kurvanti mahipala shraddham chaikadashi dine triyaste narakam yanti data bhokta chaprerakaha. If one performs the Shraddha ceremony of oblations to the forefathers on the Ekadashi Tithi, then the performer, the forefathers for whom the Shraddha is observed, and the Purohit, or the family priest, who encourages the ceremony, all go to hell. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om jnana timirantasya jnananjana shilakaya Chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagaradabhunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri
Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
I am not going to read all of the translations again. There's a reason for that, in case you haven't noticed. This is all very highly technical information, and it's all also mundane information. In case you didn't notice, there's no mention of Krishna anywhere in this passage. In fact, there's no mention of bhakti, and there's no mention of even spiritual life. It is completely mundane, it would seem. Is that true? Well, yes and no. There is, nonetheless, extensive commentary on this verse by our predecessor acharyas, Sridhar Swami, particularly Jiva Goswami, whom Srila Prabhupada quotes here, and Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur also. Actually, the verse that Srila Prabhupada is cited in his purport to texts 21 through 23 is only one of many quotes. It's from Brahmavaivarta Purana. Many, many quotes are supplied here. So one has to wonder about this. If this is mundane information, if it has apparently nothing to do with bhakti, if there's no mention of Krishna or devotional service or even spirituality, why are we so concerned about it? Why is it important enough to deserve so much attention from pure devotees? It's often the case in Vedic literature that we find implicit assumptions. And our acharya's assumption here appears to be that people are already interested in practically applying this information. People are, the information is supplied for those householders who are eager to deliver their forefathers, because a householder is responsible. We've heard recently, I think, Pancha Mahayajnas are the responsibility of the householders. They have to, among these five groups of conscious living beings that one has to appease, are the forefathers, because we're indebted to our forefathers. We exist only because of our forefathers. So a householder naturally has the desire to benefit them and thinks compassionately about their welfare. This is no longer the case in most places in the world. And even in India, these things are fast being thrown out the window deliberately, actually. I won't say they're dying off a natural death. They're actually deliberately being erased by a very aggressive group of very vocal minority of case-hardened materialists who would like to get rid of Vishnu altogether and also get rid of anything that would elevate us to receptivity to the message of Vishnu. This brings us towards the point of the verse. So it's Kali Yuga, and people are no longer interested in performing such rituals. And yet Srila Prabhupada still, in his purports here, he very faithfully represents the gist of whatever our predecessor acharyas have detailed in their own commentaries. And Srila Prabhupada's own commentaries are also very detailed. Why is that? We get a hint in the following verse. I don't want to get too far ahead of the plot, but in text 24, it's quite explicit. Ta ete shreyasa kala nranam shreyo vivardhanaha kuryat sarvatmana iteshu shreyo mogham tad ayushaha. Very clear statement there. Shreyo vivardhana. It increases shreyas. Human life is characterized by this primary concern, Shreya. It doesn't matter what your background is in South Asia. Everyone who is socialized in the traditional civilization of this subcontinent has a sense that Shreyas, the ultimate good, the ultimate benefit for all beings, is what human life is really meant for. There's one scholar, mundane scholar, named Aravinda Sharma. He used to be in Canada, I'm not sure where he is now, but he wrote an article about just observing that with all the cultural diversity, linguistic diversity, religious diversity, ethnic diversity, political diversity that we see in Europe, South Asia still had a common cultural identity that's identifiable even today. And what is it that binds all these disparate groups together? A sense of dharma. They may define dharma in different ways, but the essential property or the characteristic or at least the result of dharma is elevation. Elevation. Ultimate good. Shreyas. These two terms we find in the Shruti mantras. Shreyas and Preyas. What does Preyas mean? Preyas means kulfi. In hot weather, we all appreciate ice cream. But it's not necessarily good for you in the long term. And you certainly can't live exclusively on ice cream. So ice cream represents Shreyas, the thing which is immediately appealing, but not necessarily elevating. And Shreyas means that thing which may not be immediately appealing. It usually isn't immediately appealing. That's why people have given it up. That's why they're very aggressively trying to erase it. If you take the route through Gurgaon to go to the airport in Delhi, coming and going from Vrindavan quite a bit, I know this, you'll pass through many places, and there are new developments. It seems like everywhere there's mad development going on, not only in here in India, but all over the world, actually. Even such an idyllic place as Mauritius, which is like heaven on earth, they're trying to pave it over as fast as they possibly can, all of it. The whole country is only as big as Los Angeles, so it won't take them very long. So, one of these new developments is called Flower Park, or Central Valley, or we get, what else? Sunshine Ridge. Completely mundane and usually English names that have nothing to do with God. It used to be that you would find a place called Vishnupura if you're from West Bengal. Sri Rangam if you're from the south. Named after Ranganath, you see? God is permeating South Asian culture. And that's fast being erased, as fast as possible, as I said. Anyway, I don't want to get too far off the point. Shreyas, Shreyovivartana. There are several terms here used in text 24. Somebody else can speak about it. All these things are Shreyasa. They're all auspicious. And Kuryat, this is the same verb that is used this three times here. Kuryat is an imperative verb. It means you have to do this. That's another thing that's very interesting. We'll speak about it in a moment. And Shreyo Amogham Tad Ayushaha. Your life will become flawless. Everyone has a life. Everyone is doing something with that life. But most of our lives are mogha. Krishna said, what does mogha mean? Futile. What does Krishna say about this in Bhagavad Gita? Particularly about those persons who are building places like Flower Valley, Central Park. Mokha sha, mokha karnamano, mokha jnana vicheta saha. Raksha sima surim chaiva, mohinim. Their aspirations are foiled. Their activities are for naught. Their knowledge is destroyed. Mokha. So if you don't want to be a mokha, then you have to focus on shreyas. This is the point. And these things, they fortify, or they nourish, or they engender shreyas, a spirit of shreyas. All these things. This is the words of the Srila Vyasadeva, the words of the Bhagavatam, Narad Muni. It's very difficult to ignore them. Now, I'm going to introduce another problem here. Srila Prabhupada mentions this. Actually, all Rajarshis, they know this. They understand. And those Rajarshi means he's a responsible leader in human society, and he therefore feels some obligation to elevate the people in his charge, the citizens. So Rajarshis know this. Even Bhagavad Gita knew this. Even Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita knew this. In chapter number 1, text 39, he says, "With the destruction of the dynasty, eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion." And he goes on to say, "When irreligion is prominent, the women of the family become polluted. And from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. With an increase of unwanted population, certainly causes hellish life both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. Patanti pitaro hyesham lupta pindodaka kriyaha." We're talking about shraddha today, the responsibility of family members to deliver their forefathers. Srila Prabhupada discusses this in 4th canto, chapter 18, text number 18 in his purport. Sometimes, not all the time, but we don't know when, sometimes a person dies in an unusual mode of consciousness and may not have the opportunity of taking birth again in a gross material body. They become ghosts. They're called pretas. What does preta mean? Preta, pra-ita, somebody who has gone on. Everybody by default is a preta when you die. But if your ancestors offer pindas, then you're elevated to the position of a pitta, pitta, for 3 generations, and it's constantly changing. When someone new dies, and then the pinda is performed, then that person joins the pittas, and the fourth one, he goes on. This is the idea, because the Shruti mantra enjoins there is no such thing as a fourth pinda, only 3. That's more ritual, we don't need to get into it. But Srila Prabhupada describes this shraddha ceremony, and he says, according to the rules and regulations of fruitive activities, karma. Karma means dharma. If it's not karma, what is it? It's either vikarma or akarma. You have to figure this out. This offering is performed. There is a need to offer periodical food and water to the forefathers of the family. This offering is performed by worship of Vishnu, because eating the remnants of food offered to Vishnu can deliver one from all kinds of sinful reactions. Sometimes the forefathers may be suffering from various types of sinful reactions, and sometimes some of them cannot even acquire a gross material body and are forced to remain in subtle bodies as ghosts. Thus, when remnants of prasadam food are offered to the forefathers by descendants, the forefathers are released from ghostly or other kinds of miserable life. Such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional service are required to perform such rituals. One who is engaged in the devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds of thousands of forefathers from all kinds of misery. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Devarshi bhutaptam ranam pitrinam nakim karo nayam ranicharajan sarvatmana yah sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parihritya kartam. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has thus taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then the question is, if Srimad Bhagavatam says one thing, and elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam it says another thing, what are we to conclude? Here it says, a householder should perform tratha. And it even tells us in all detail, more detail than we can even understand, how to do this. The implicit assumption being that we want to do it. But then in the 11th canto, it says, if you take to devotional service in all seriousness, then you don't have to do this. It's actually consistent, although it looks contradictory. It's actually consistent with what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. He says that for someone whose only pleasure is atmarati, then that person has no duty to perform. Yastu atmaratireva syat atmatrittascha manavaha atman yeva cha santushtas tasya karyam vidyate. Atmarati eva. What does the word eva mean? Only. Only atmarati. Generally, we are not only absorbed in atmarati. Rati means love. Atma means spirituality generally, or spiritual identity, or ultimately Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Lord. This atmarati has to be there. And similarly, Srila Prabhupada is qualified. When one is a pure devotee, he doesn't have to perform any rituals. Even if he may not perform something, it is overlooked because he's taken to the conclusion of all rituals, which is pure devotional service. Nonetheless, as I said earlier, we don't know how we're doing, really. We don't know how our forefathers were doing, where they've gone. So many, many people, even devotees, perform the Shraddha ceremony. And as a matter of fact, it was Lord Caitanya Mahaprabhu's own example that he also went to Vishnugaya. Vishnugaya is such a place, we're getting all detailed instructions about when to perform the Shraddha ceremony here in this passage. But it's described in I think it's Garuda Purana, that you can do Shraddha ceremony at any time if you go to Vishnugaya and do it there. Anyone here ever been to Vishnugaya in Bihar? Very famous place, very nice place. The deity there is Adi Gadadhara, Gadadhara Vishnu. And his lotus feet are represented in the ground there. So people offer Shraddha ceremony there. Every day there are large crowds of people coming from all over the place. So, Srila Prabhupada writes about this in his texts, 42 purport also. He says, well, Arjun says, by the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition and thus give rise to unwanted children, all kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. Srila Prabhupada writes, community projects are for the four orders of human society combined with family welfare activities as they are set forth by the institution of Sanatana Dharma or Varnashram Dharma. What does Sanatana mean? Eternal. Esha Dharma Sanatanaha. And Arjuna also characterizes these things, these mundane things, as eternal. So, they're designated to enable the human being to attain his ultimate salvation. This is the Shreyas that we spoke about earlier. Therefore, the breaking of the Sanatana Dharma tradition by irresponsible leaders of society brings about chaos in that society, and consequently people forget the aim of life, Vishnu. Such leaders are called blind, and persons who follow such leaders are sure to be led into chaos. In fact, Arjuna says, here, next verse, this is first chapter, text 43 of Bhagavad Gita, I've heard by disciplic succession that those who destroy family traditions dwell always in hell. So it's serious business, and here it's also pointed out, Srila Prabhupada ends the purport on a very ominous note. If you perform a Shraddha ceremony on Ekadashi, you go to hell, your forefathers go with you, and so does the priest. All right, so even Vaishnavas follow these things, actually. Ramanujacharya, shortly before he disappeared from this world, he gave some important instructions to his followers, and they're still being followed to this day. This is another salient characteristic of South Asian culture. Conservatism is possible in Hindu tradition, Vedic tradition. It is hardly possible, I can say, in modern Western society, which is too passionate to accommodate that idea. When I was in college, they taught us that they have found shards of pottery that are exactly the same shape as this tali and katori that you can purchase in the market even today, but they were from 3,000 years ago. And similarly, in Punjab, other places, now Pakistan, Haryana, they have found broken pieces of these churiyan that women wear, the little glass bangles, from thousands of years ago. That is called cultural continuity. And there's a reason for it. This is one of them. Actually, Manusmriti enjoins, if one is ever not sure what to do, how to follow the path of dharma, then the default imperative is that you simply follow whatever your forefathers have done with the understanding that that is dharma, and you simply follow that thing. Whatever they understood to be dharma, you follow that thing. That, of course, assumes that you're born in Aryavarta, which is North India. That's another matter. But the point is, Ramanujacharya saw the utility of not only Varnashram Dharma in general, Daivi Varnashram in particular, for supporting Krishna consciousness, for supporting pure devotional service. And that's why these instructions are here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why Srila Prabhupada encourages also that they should be followed. That's why all of our acharyas for the last 100 years or so have similarly encouraged us to follow these things. As an adjunct or an aspect of Daivi Varnashram Dharma, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saw the value of that example or that shishtachara, we call it, sadachara, among the Sri Vaishnavas, and as much as possible he incorporated that within his own institution, Gaudiya Math. He was not acting independently. He was working on the strong desire of his own father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, you can understand. He was very interested in this. Therefore, it's not at all surprising that Srila Prabhupada was likewise interested in implementing the Varnashram culture within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This was the example and the precept and the instruction of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. In fact, he even went so far as to say that it was the remaining 50% of his mission. And he was on his way to the United States in 1977 with the explicit purpose of personally training his disciples how to live according to Varnashram in his farm community, which he named at that time Gita Nagari. Previously it was called Nuvarshana. I used to live there. In 1977, Srila Prabhupada changed it to Gita Nagari, and that community is still there. So Srila Prabhupada endorsed these things, and therefore he describes them. That's why they're in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Somebody has to follow them. Srimad Bhagavatam kicks out Kaitava Dharma, and yet it's full of instructions on these mundane topics. We have to understand them in that context, and we have to appreciate their utility. But the way that Srila Prabhupada endorses or encourages these practices is always such that we can never lose sight of the ultimate gain that these things should lead us to, which is not only Shreyas, but in particular, Parodharma, pure devotional service. There's a very well-known passage of the Vishnu Purana, sixth book, in which Maharaj Sagar asks his guru, who is the guru of Sagar Maharaj? Arifa Muni. He says, I'm king, I'm responsible for everyone's spiritual upliftment. How am I going to effect that? What should I do to actually help people come to pure devotional service? He was explicitly interested in bringing general masses into pure devotional service. We also have this concern if we are responsible members of ISKCON. So it's something we should listen to. And his long answer, Arva Muni explains, the high point of his answer is, Varna Shama Charavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Aratanam Pungsam. Am I mixed up? Nanya Tattoshakaranam. He goes so far as to say that Varnashram is the way to please Vishnu, and there's no other way to please Vishnu. That also has to be understood in context. His point being that you can hardly take to Krishna consciousness unless you're situated in piety, which is what Krishna himself says in chapter 7, text 28. Who knows the verse? Yesham tu antagatam papam janānam punya karmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mantra havrataha. If you're interested in sustaining a mature commitment to pure devotional service, Krishna says, this is what you need to do. You need to be situated in piety now, and you have to be relieved of impious reactions from the past. Now, fortunately for us, Krishna consciousness automatically affects both of these things. In that sense, one can say that we don't need to worry about, to say, Panchamaha Yajnas or an Ashram Dharma even, what to speak of Shraddha ceremony, which in some places is even advised not to perform for Vaishnavas. But this is relative consideration. It depends on how much you are into Krishna consciousness, how deeply you're absorbed. As Prabhupada is qualified here. If he's taking to the path in all seriousness, that indicates exclusive devotion, ananya bhakti, then he doesn't have to worry. In much of the same way that Krishna says, yastu atmaratir eva syat. Yastu atmaratir eva. If your only interest is in the atma. To the extent that we are not interested in the atma, then Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, Krishna instructs, we should very carefully follow all the rules and regulations of the Shastras. And we should cultivate sattva guna and continue hearing and chanting until we come to that state wherein we have exclusive and total taste for Vasudeva. This is the point. So Srila Prabhupada says things that appear to dismiss the importance of mundane rituals and mundane duties even within the realm of dharma. just like he's quoted this verse. If one has taken to Krishna consciousness, he says that he's not required to perform such rituals. So another point that he stresses with this emphasis is that one should not be drowned in mundane activities and think that that's the all-in-all. Shrama eva hi kevalam, Srimad Bhagavatam says on the other hand. It's only a waste of time if it doesn't actually lead you to this ultimate shreyas, ultimate dharma, paro dharma, pure devotional service. You're wasting your time. Except in that maybe you'll be more receptive to Krishna consciousness the next time some pure devotee comes and tries to offer it to you. But otherwise it's a waste of time. This is described at great length in the next chapter. For those of you who are curious about it, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Texts number 1 through 14, they describe all the different modes of cheating religion that one might be absorbed in. So it's to discourage that sometimes we also say these things are not really necessary. So what is the conclusion? This is something Krishna has told Uddhava in the 11th canto. Sve sve adhikare ya nishtha sa guna parikirtataha. The qualification is to be situated in your own adhikar. If your adhikar is less, then you have to follow the injunctions appropriate to that level of adhikar. If your adhikar is more, then you are free. Yastu atmaratere vasyat. This is the point. And we can't judge ourselves generally. That's why we accept spiritual masters. So yasya prasadan, bhagavat prasadam. Yasya prasadan, nagati katopi. If the spiritual master is pleased, then we know Krishna is also pleased. If he's not pleased, then how are we going to attain the goal? Whatever the goal is. Okay, so I'm going to stop here. Anybody have any questions or comments on any of this? Yes. That should be a microphone.
Okay. Hare Krishna. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expresses, Prabhupada Seva Na Seva Na Seva Gatiyam. Gatro Kama No Yam No.
Sorry?
Three times stressing, no other way.
No other way, correct.
Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says this means no karma, no jnana, or no yoga.
Yes.
These things are not possible in Kaviraj. Mm. Only the attention of the Holy Name. Mm-hmm. So when he says no karma, he's meaning no bhakti.
That's a good question. Devotees, we call this Daivi Varnashram, because it's understood to be, well, it's, I won't say antithetical, but it's the opposite of the mundane varnashram. In mundane varnashram, Prathama Pujya, who is Prathama Pujya? Ganesha. He's called Vignanashana. And, or Vinayaka. But what does Vinayaka mean? The Upasarga V can mean two things. It can mean either Vishesh, or it can mean, Vishesh means especially, or it can mean Vigata, means opposite. So Ganapati is actually the opposition leader. He takes you in the wrong direction by giving his blessings for material progress. Yeah, so this is something to consider. So all of the mundane injunctions in the Vedas, they're of the same nature. If you see them, or if you employ them for non-devotional purposes, then they take you in the wrong way. This is why Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami can also say in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, dharma is the root of all cheating. Very strong statement. But devotees don't see it like that. And certainly our acharyas don't see it like that. Vyasadeva doesn't see it like that. Narad Muni didn't see it like that. Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, and Srila Prabhupada does not see it that way. That's why they're giving the positive instruction here. We see this as corollary to chanting of the holy name. We are using this process to enable us to chant Shuddha Nam, to bring us to that point, because it is favorable. We also hear, in terms of Sharanagati, one should accept what is favorable and one should reject what is unfavorable. Our acharyas accept these things as favorable, if we understand them in the proper spirit and use them for the proper purpose. Is that clear? It's ultimately only accessory to chanting of the holy name, just like Gayatri Mantra for that matter. Gayatri Mantra is only valuable up until the point of liberation. After that point, it's no longer necessary. So why do we even take the Gayatri Mantra if the holy name is everything? Because we require help. We require so much help. Is that okay?
Yeah. I'm just thinking sometimes it is said that Dhamma Sangha is not known here. It's not the same process as Bhakti at all. It's only
known. Yeah, not at all. Not at all.
It's not at all. Chanting the holy name, Dhamma Sangha, worshiping the deity, living in the holy Dhamma, associating with the devotees. These are the five principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
That's right. But neither is it negligible if we are on the platform of the car that requires it. This is the point.
But it's not difficult. It doesn't appear to be this process is being spoken of.
Uh-huh.
It is to be very difficult.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
While doing those things, chanting,
yeah, this is this. Yeah, this is another very good point. It's a fact. We cannot actually follow any other process. Cannot follow it. And this is another thing that distinguishes Asuri Varnashram from Daivi Varnashram. Devotees follow everything very strictly, but they don't depend on those things. They depend only on Krishna, with the understanding that I'm not going to be able to do it. So we follow for the sake of following the injunctions, because if we disobey the order of the spiritual master, that in itself is namaparat. If we blaspheme Vedic literatures, such as, say, Manusmriti, that itself is namaparat. So, nagati kutopi, how will we attain our goal? We have to follow. But since we cannot follow, the understanding is that, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, every endeavor is covered by some sort of flaw. That is the understanding. But if our purpose is to please Krishna in pure devotion, then everything is reconciled. Flaws or no flaws, it's okay. Okay? You had a question.
Although you were speaking that just like Malak Mahal is a pure devotee, for his seventh generation, before him, but if any one of the devotees who are totally surrendered to Krishna, they see Krishna everywhere, just like Malak Mahal, who see Krishna everywhere.
I'm not able to hear you. You can speak a little louder.
If a devotee sees Krishna everywhere,
yes. Yes.
So his generation will be liberated.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100 of generations to best in
the Yes.
So we don't have to worry about our poor fathers or anything that they are liberated or not.
Correct.
And what type of liberation is there? Somebody says the liberations are between times. So what type of liberation they get?
Yeah, that's another question. There are two questions here. Number one, what kind of liberation are you talking about? There are many kinds, including non-devotional liberation even. And then the second thing is that a devotee who is liberated, as you said, he doesn't have to worry about liberating his forefathers, it's already done. Yeah, it depends. It depends entirely on one's adhikar again. This is a devotee of Prahlad's character. That benediction was given to Prahlad Maharaj. If we feel that we're on Prahlad Maharaj's platform of advancement, then good luck. Otherwise, what I see in our books, throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, is that even the examples of liberated souls, Krishna's own associates, they're following all Vedic rituals, evidently with the understanding that we're just ordinary conditioned souls. That humility is there among the pure devotees.
what kind of vibration they get.
Who?
The four pilots.
They may not be liberated. If you're performing shraddha, they're just elevated to another human birth or any other kind of birth for that matter. They get a gross body. They're not no longer pretas. This is the point. Sorry?
They can be delivered from hell.
They can be delivered from hell. Putra. So, yeah, they're not necessarily liberated, but at least they can come up. This is the point. Okay. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, if somebody takes prasadam, is accustomed to taking Krishna prasadam, he at least gets a human birth. So, like that. This is the benefit. All right, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.